since Dana and I are VHS comedians in a TikTok world.
Now you got to go and bake a cake. And
the following podcast features topics discussed by geeks or under the supervision of nerds. Accordingly, Geek Life and its producers must insist that no one attempt to recreate or reenact any of the topics or bad impressions performed on this show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Life HQ. This is episode 95, and today we have some very special guests, don't we, Matt?
Yes, we do.
All right, so it's Matt and Justin with an I. Justin with an E is driving home, and our guests today are huge stars in the world of film, animation, podcast, and, of course, comedy. First, we have our very talented actor, comedian, and director, starring in films such as Scrooged, Police Academy 3, Hot to Trot, and the writer-director of Shakes the Clown, Mr. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Well, thank you. I'm good. I don't want to, whatever. I was in Police Academy 2, but whatever.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
I was in 2, 3, and 4. I left.
I remember 3 and 4.
Yeah. I when the script came in for 5, I said, this is shit. I can't do this.
You don't want to go to Miami?
This is not the quality that I'm used to. And I felt that we had taken the character Zed as far as we could.
Enough Sweet Chuck in here to balance out the Zed. So.
And he's in the upcoming prequel, The Many Saints of Miami Beach.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah.
That's also starring Michael Gandolfini, I hear.
Which
Michael Gutenberg. It stars Michael Gutenberg.
It's Goot's very much alive, but we got his son to be in it. But it's you know, The Many Saints of Newark was definitely the Muppet Babies of The Sopranos.
I just watched that last week, too. So, and our second guest is a stand-up comic, a former writer for The Simpsons, a voice actor, and a host of his own podcast. I have the Dana Gould Hour and Cinemorph, Mr. Dana Gould. Did I get him right?
Yeah, it's good.
All right, excellent. How are you guys doing, first of all? Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm not doing well. I'm out promoting this movie and I don't like Dana anymore.
Yeah. That's just
I'm great. I'm great.
Next movie is going to be The Nutty Professor, where he plays both him and me.
I always thought Paul Rubens should have done that, right? That would have been perfect for him.
Paul Rubens could do anything in my book.
The Nutty Professor would be right. It would be great. You know, I'm playing a dark guy, and then but no one asked me, by the way.
Well, I'm sure it would come up. We'd start talking about the movie Blow, but I mean, between like your performance and his performance in that movie, Johnny Who, I mean, it was amazing.
Well, I did this on stage but it did happen. I said, is anybody in the scene not on probation? Because it was me and Johnny Depp and Paul Rubens and Johnny Depp, I go, you smashed up that hotel. And he's like, yeah. I go, were you drunk? And Johnny Depp was funny. He goes, in my defense, the hotel room made the first move. And then he goes, you set the Tonight Show on fire. And then we both look at Paul Rubens and we go, yeah, okay. have you been to Crafty? So I got an email from Paul where he was mad at me, and I don't know if that was why he was mad at me or whatever, but it's just like, I got nothing but love and respect for Paul Rubens, but it was just weird. It was like a really nice letter. And then he said, I heard you were talking shit about me. And I was like,
what? Oh my goodness.
Maybe that story is it. I don't know. I mean,
that's so consistent.
I can imagine. I know Paul and I love Paul, and I can only imagine what knowing the sensitive person that he is, how traumatizing that must have been. What we don't know is the crazy fucking Bible people that came after him. You know, that's where your death threats come.
Yeah, and also it was also just so weird. Remember a similar thing happened to Fred Willard.
Yeah.
And then like people, they were calling it, he was caught doing a Pee Wee Herman. And it's just like, so we're not going to talk about the guy's Emmys or his films. That's what his body of work is going to be reduced to, you know, but so maybe, I don't know. Why am I talking about this? I shouldn't, but all right.
I just have that face, you know. It's
you get a fucking dick face.
You do.
I guess it's like I'm like yes. Tell. But I mean that's one of the things I noticed about watching Joyride, your guys' film, and you know, segue. And this is a documentary about a comedy road trip, you seem so well adjusted, Bobcat. Like just. Like I can't believe, like I'm watching this
magic of film. About,
like as a kid, I'm watching, and you know, you're doing your thing, lighting stuff on fire, throwing stuff right. on Arsenio and all that. I'm like, yeah, I know him. He's awesome, man. This is great. Like, I described to Matt earlier, you guys are punk rock comedians. You know, where you get up and you don't care, you do your shit, and you're throwing stuff around, and your jokes, Dana, your jokes are dark. My kids left the room. They're like, I cannot handle this. Like, Dad, that man is wrong. And I'm like, why? I'm like, what? What's a rape joke amongst friends? I mean, come on.
Well, it's
that's so funny. They're just because people, I get that a lot, and I know I was very dark. I don't consider myself dark at all now.
Yeah,
but I know that that's me. Like to me, it's like, yeah, well, that's to me what's funny.
Well, I think it's hilarious.
It's yeah. weird because. Like Dana and I recently were in Austin doing the show, and then there was a guy who was an anti-vaxxer. His name was Caleb Wallace, and he led the Freedom Rally. And you know where this is going. It's sad. He has three kids and a pregnant wife, and he ends up in the hospital with COVID and he dies. And it's sad because I didn't get to watch him die. Like, I really wish I could have been in the hospital room. Like, I wish I could have pulled the ventilator and said, no, people who are really sick need this. You know, you don't get to go to the magic building where medicine is when you say medicine isn't real. So, you know, I did that in Texas and then people got up and left, which I was just kind of like, I still got it. I can still gut a room.
you definitely influenced me to check out Bridget Everett.
And, oh, wow.
Immediately after watching Joyride, I checked out that other show in Cars of He Who Shall Not Be Named. But I watched it and they totally bleep out everything. And I'm like, holy shit. Now I know they're talking about Bobcat. But yeah. Her point was so salient. She's like, I love when people walk out because it knows that people are getting a reaction that I got through to someone and all that. So that's still something that you feel today, it sounds like.
Well, it's also, no, because, you know, initially when I started doing stand-up again, I found myself pulling back and editing myself a little bit, knowing that I was going to upset people in the room. And then I just said, fuck it. I got to go back. I got to be true to myself. And I've just got to go up there and do what I've always done, you know? And if people are going to get upset, you know, look, if you're offended, man, no, but it, you know,
that's Dana's line.
I don't make like, I don't, you know, people discover my stuff and then they act upset. And it's like, could you think for a moment, everything, actually our culture's changed. When I made Shakes the Clown, every movie was made trying to get as many people in the seats. And so when people saw it and they didn't like it, it was like, do you think for a moment that you weren't my target demo? It's like, you know, back in the day when people would say, this Ernest film is stupid. It's like,
His nephew was our last guest.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's like, wasn't made for you, man. He wasn't made for you.
What was that guy's name?
Jim Varney. And
Jim Varney. Is he still with us?
No, he passed away 2001.
Oh, well,
okay. Shortly after his appearance on The Simpsons. So,
nice. Oh, man.
Yeah. Just going through your guys' body of work, too, like just from like the early days and things with stand up and all that. Like a lot of the stuff is, I see there's a lot of voice work in that. What can you tell us about like working on shows like Beavis and Butthead or Dana? You worked on Doug. I kept trying to find out.
I did work on Doug, and people, the thing that of all the things that I've done, the thing with the most staying power is a video game called Gex.
Yep, Gex, Enter the Gecko.
And people, when I go on the road, a week does not go by where in the meet and greet, somebody has a game cartridge for me.
But what about Doug? Do people come up and say?
When people find out, I was the voice of his guidance counselor, Mr. Shalaki. And I was recently at, here's the thing. There's a...
Did you pull a lot of wool with that?
Oh, man.
Seems like you'd pull mad wool with that fact, though. Yeah. I was on Doug Unfunny.
Nice.
But I was on a show in LA called Supernova, which is a really great new room, kind of an indie room that's great. And I showed it was my first time there. And there are some younger comics there that I didn't know that were great. And I felt a little like, okay, I'm at their clubhouse, so I'm just going to kind of shut up and go do my set and let them come to me. And the person that introduced me was very gracious. And he said, like, this guy was on Doug. This guy was the voice of my childhood. I don't know what to say. it was very lovely. I was like, oh, I guess. Okay, good. Well, I feel good now.
Matt's a huge fan of the Police Academy cartoon. So.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Man. Yeah. All now, the did, other.
Do you ever get money from that?
No. Did they have a guy doing an impression of me on
that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You had an action figure, man.
Yes.
I know I had an action figure, but I didn't know that there was somebody doing me. Because like sometimes people will ask me to do a voiceover in an animated series and I can't work it out a schedule or I say no. And part of me is like, you know, people can do the impression. It really wouldn't hurt my feelings. You know what I mean?
But you could sue them also for that, I think.
But only if they ask you and then you say no. Yeah. And then they find someone impersonate you. If right. somebody did me on something.
And you know who was the first lawsuit that established that?
Bette Midler.
From what I understood, it was Tom Waits on a commercial. They wanted Tom Waits to do like a Doritos commercial. He said no. And they got a Tom Waits sound alike. And then Doritos ended up paying him a lot of fucking money.
Wasn't this like a Super Bowl or something? Like a Super Bowl ad or something?
Yeah. Bette Midler might have been the first one.
He's getting that Jay Leno money then.
If it was Bette Midler had the similar thing, they asked her to do a commercial. She said no. Then they got someone that sounded like her.
Yeah.
That's the difference between Dana and I. I know all about Bette Midler. He knows all about Tom Waits.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's two very different, distinctive styles of music, too.
And, you know, and, yeah. Neither one leads to pulling wool, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't know. I've been to Bette Midler shows.
Rich Fox used to say
steel wool, sure.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Bette Midler. I didn't think we'd go there, but
I know, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Bob, tell the cabaret poster story.
Oh yeah. I live in the middle of Illinois now. I live in.
Oh, welcome. That's where we are.
Oh, really? Yeah. I live out by Wheaton, kind of. So it's not in the middle.
Okay. I won't say anything on air, but holy crap.
And, but I live in
a tiny town. Your kids can play.
I live in a tiny town that I'm not going to say the name of, but it has less than 4,000 people here. But I buy this cabaret poster and, with Liza Minnelli, because Bob Fosse is one of my favorite directors, and I get the wrong address, and it goes to the only construction company in town, and I walk in the door. It says, "We support the men and women who protect our freedoms," and I walk in this construction kind of building, and there's my Liza Minnelli poster, and it's on a sheet of plywood on sawhorses. And I go, "Hey, I think I accidentally," and they go, "Yeah, it's over there. We opened it up." Like they couldn't make eye contact with me. They just never, you show people, you know, whatever you do, that's fine. You know, but yeah, I love cabaret.
Now, did you know the story or did you tell me this story? That Richard Dreyfuss was booked to play Bob Fosse and all that jazz. And he complained to Roy Scheider that he feared he was miscast. And then Roy Scheider got on the phone and got the part.
He said, "Hey, Bob, that's great."
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so great! That's your Jaws connection right there.
That's exactly. No, that's how they know each other. Wow. He's like, I don't know if this is the right thing. Rush is like, you're right. You are miscast.
Would it be great if it ended up going to Robert Shaw instead?
Yeah.
It's like I'll play him with some piano wire.
Yes. But instead of cigarettes, he's smoking he's drinking Narragansetts.
Oh like, yeah, that totally.
I'll get you your dance number.
10,000, I'll kill it.
I'll kill it. Dance number.
Oh.
That'll get you jazz. You know what all that jazz is. The whole thing.
Jeez.
Yeah, we were actually supposed to do, we have a local theater out here. We were supposed to do cabaret in 2020, and it was a Naperville Summer Place Theater out here.
Cabaret. Are you in
Naperville? Yeah, yeah.
That's where Open Court was from.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, Bob Odenkirk's from Naperville.
Yeah, man.
Hang on, I got a little dog in.
Nobody was amazing. Okay. Yeah, so we were supposed to do cabaret, and that got crushed because of COVID. So we ended up doing, we've got Sound of Music coming up. So
wow. Yeah, it's one of the few musicals with Nazis in it, but that's kind of why I'm
reticent from trying out, because I know they're going to make me a Nazi.
It's the only musical with Nazis in it not written by Mel Brooks.
Unlike Mel, there's no singing Nazis, you know, there's no like, how do you kill a family like the Von Trapp?
doesn't Friedrich sing? I don't know.
Oh yeah, he does during I Am 16. By the way, just super straight. Just like to put that out there, but yeah.
Hey, Justin, what'd you do today? Oh, well, you know, I talked with Bobcat Goldthwait about musicals.
About like, Sound of Music and Cabaret.
Like, really? Yeah.
Yeah, I
watched Cabaret. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Seinfeld quotes were off limits.
Nah.
I
was saying to Justin, I didn't think Seinfeld was like that. And then, you know, it makes me shine a whole another light on him for me. You playing that clip in the Joyride. Right. I was like, wow, man, holy shit. I didn't think that dude had a bad bone in his body, but I guess not.
It's funny. It's like, look, I bashed that guy brutally.
And we know why, you know,
and it was no, but I actually thought like he was over it, because I run into his manager and he's a very nice guy. He's very sweet, George Shapiro. And then on that, you know, rich comedians and cars bitching that their diamond shoes are too tight. When he goes on that tear about me, it was just like so weird. So clearly he still did have a problem with me. But then in an interview, he said that was his favorite part of the new season and all this stuff. And it's and it's just like, so he goes on this thing and then people Google and try to figure out who's he talking about. And then they Google Jerry Seinfeld and me. And then they go back and they find these bits where I'm talking about him banging teenage girls and being very supportive of Scientology. It's like, nicely played, Jerry. You know, you could have got, we all forgot all that crap. Well done. And then, you know, I truly don't walk around going, oh, I hate Seinfeld. I was just like, you know, whatever. But it's kind of like when he put that out into the world, I felt like it was like, I felt like I was some kind of old gunslinger who's retired.
Shrugs over here.
And then, and then they call me and I'm like, oh, and I got to get the 45s down. I'm fired. And I'm like, really? You want to go? You want to? All right, Jerry, I can't, you know. And then we met in town square. But it's just like, dude, I didn't invent it, but I was one of the people that landed on the beach in regards to celebrity bashing. It's like, please don't. This is not going to be pretty. You really don't want to get into it.
Yeah. That's what Matt was saying, that it was. You know, when you were starting out, you seemed like the sort of like the anti-comedian. Mm-hmm. You're just getting up there and doing shit and just kind of like shredding it up. And I was trying to think of anybody that I could really compare you to. And I don't know why, like a little bit, I went to Gilbert Gottfried, because it always seemed like neither of you really cared if anybody liked what you were doing. You it because it made you laugh.
Well, Gilbert and I kind of got started at the same time, and we definitely in the same wheelhouse and kind of just did what we wanted to do. And often horrible behavior was encouraged.
For one second, because I have a little bit of objectivity, Bob's early act was a parody of a stand-up act. I mean, the nature of that persona was, who's the last person on earth who should be doing stand-up comedy? This person. And it was sort of a parody of a stand-up. So it's, and to not, you know, to not, you know, so like for a comedian to not like it is for a comedian to not get it. Mm-hmm. Like he's not, he's making fun of what you do. So I can understand why if you're insecure about it, you wouldn't like it.
Or if you, yeah. I mean, if you, yeah.
I don't think that, Mel Torme liked The Clash. You know?
Right, right. But, you know, and then I became the very thing I was making fun of. And then I kind of had to jettison the whole career.
Yeah, because it didn't work. Yeah, because you can't do both. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I ended up becoming a storyteller, which I'm, and I guess I'm still kind of shake things up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I, when I was a kid, I loved like David Steinberg and Robert Klein and David Brenner, even, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I love these observational humorists. So, you know, watching somebody doing that still after they'd already done it in the 70s, I wasn't like going, well, that's fascinating. But whatever. So Jerry's got a problem with me. I don't wake up in cold sweats in the middle of the night. Oh, Jerry, you know, but I don't know if it's, we'll see what happens.
You're going to show up at your house driving Christine.
Yeah. Well,
hey, nice. Oh, nice.
If he wisely, he should probably not acknowledge this thing, but you know, I think that there's a good chance that Joyride's name is going to be cease and desist. It's not like he signed paperwork.
Matt, that's like us with the estate of Wilford Brimley.
It is, yeah.
No.
Tell the story, man. Tell the story.
We love Wilford. We just put.
I've had some Wilford Brimley dealings myself. I'm very.
I know.
We absolutely love. That's like he's like one of our favorite celebrities and all that. We've been podcasting for a while, so you know we're like middle of the road. And while he was still with us, you know, we had posted some of his music, and he's doing like a Conan O'Brien show. He's doing like Old MacDonald Had a Farm or something on the jazz. So we put it in, and we kind of cease and desist. It's like, well, guys, I guess we've hit it.
I was on Seinfeld with Will Brimley, so that ties it all together.
Awesome.
Wilford Brimley was a singer?
He was a jazz musician, so we were as surprised as you.
Wow. I thought you were going to go a different way with that. I thought you were going to go with a dick print.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We made a comment about how he signs his books with his dick on a stamp pad. So,
but he's no longer with us, right?
This was years ago.
Yeah. I did parodies of those Quaker Oat commercials, right, on Ben Stiller's show.
Cause it's good.
And it really made fun of him. And then I was on the same episode of Seinfeld as he was. And when I met him, cause I heard he's a weird dude. And when I met him, I was afraid. Like, and he was just like, Will Brimley.
You want to hear about some Ewoks? No, not really, but thanks.
I'll kill anything.
All right. Wow.
Love it.
Well, we'll see if we hear from... is it like, if I mention it again, is he like Beetlejuice? If we say
he's just going to fucking pop up in the
Brimley three more times.
I think he has Candyman status now, so you have to say it 5 times.
Oh, okay.
You talked about diabetes for the 5th time. I'm doing God.
Yeah, just his foot survived.
You say Candyman 3 times, Anthony Newley shows up.
I love it. Man, this is great because like, just watching this last night, people are really going to enjoy this film.
Well, thanks. I hope so. I mean, I haven't seen it with people, and I honestly don't know what people will make of it, you know?
I don't either. And I will say, you know, it's Bob's movie. I'm just in it. But Bob really created it out of whole cloth and imposed a narrative and a storyline to it, in addition to having a concert film with the it's like, here's these two performers doing what they do, and here's some backstory as to how they not only became the people that they are, but also how they came into conflict with each other. And that was all an afterthought, really.
Yeah, I mean, if the pandemic had never happened, it would have probably been a concert film with a tiny little bit backstage stuff. But because I took like 8 months to get it in shape with the editors, I was able to find materials and get into the
stuff I didn't know existed.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we didn't know that existed, and then it was also funny to get versions of the stuff. Like the PSA of me setting the Tonight Show on fire doesn't it's really hard to get. Or
that
you
was
know,
awesome.
When Dana had the Bob Hope raw footage, it should have been like, I could have sworn I heard Angels and it was backlit. It was backlit, you know?
The best is the story that you're talking about literally right before that. You're like, oh, I heard Bob Hope is a piece of shit. I'm like, guys, watch this movie. It's like,
what? Well, you know, there is stuff I cut, which there's the clip of Kurt Cobain, when Chad says, I think I'm talking about me. He says, I think he's a nice guy. I just don't think he's funny. And then Kurt shoots him a really shitty look.
That was awesome.
In real life, the next thing Kurt says is, you're next.
I honestly said that when I was watching. I'm like, that's why you're out of the fucking band.
Well, and I already feel like this poor guy's already the Pete Best of Nirvana. Now I'm telling you about it. But
he's the Beatles of removed drummers. Oh wait, no, not even that. That was just for Dana, guys.
Dana. Yeah, I got it. You know what's funny is like, when I rappelled in nude from the roof of the Oakland Coliseum during the Nirvana concert at New Year's,
you're my fucking hero.
I always thought
you're the only person I know that can start a story like that.
But here's the thing: in my mind, it was cold that night, you know. And then I saw the footage, and it is the most flattering footage of my penis. The harness made things. I don't know what's going on, but
wow.
But I come flying down from the roof of the Coliseum, and it's like Snuffleupagus or something. And hey, bird, my penis is talking. So my girlfriend Nora, we watched the clip, and she goes, "Whoa, what?" She was taken back, and she's familiar with my penis.
She's like, "Why did you get rid of that one?" No, it's the same one.
No, that's me. But I didn't include that just because there's certain things that I did have it in. But after that, it was like, you know what I mean? It was like suddenly cutting to the Zapruder film out of the, like, what did I just see? Was that brains? You know,
I don't mind being emotionally naked. But
yeah,
apropos of nothing, I will just say Dave Thomas, who we both know from SCTV, said, Bob, talking about Bob Hope, Bob's the kind of guy that if he was driving down the street and saw a hungry kid, he'd pull over and offer to sell him an apple.
God, man.
So it
wouldn't
is,
offer him a cold one, eh?
it's some back bacon. It's definitely like, the legalese of it, of fair use. If someone talks about me or a subject or whatever, you can fair use, you can include that footage. You can't use that footage in promotional materials. So the trailer has to be without any, but it would have been funny. It could have been like that Bob Hope. And it could have been Joyride with Kurt Cobain, Gary Seinfeld, Regis Philbin. You know, it could just went.
If you see one Bob Hope, Kurt Cobain film this year,
Nirvana was always playing USO, right? They're going out for the troops. They're like, I just want to say imperialism. Okay, that seems very consistent with their first album.
Here's a little song called "Rape Me," and I'm sending it out to our boys over there.
I'll lick your open sores, everybody.
Oh man.
You know, the lyric, teenage angst is paid off well, now I'm bored and old. He said to me, because like, he thought that was a really funny joke. And he's like, nobody gets me, you know? And I had the similar experience with David Bowie, believe it or not, where he told me this lyric and he thought it was funny. And he's like, nobody gets it. Like the album, Bowie, there's Low, which is, and it's, the shot is his face from the side, so it's low profile. He thought that was funny. Nobody got it. But then Nick Lowe did an album called Bowie, and then they all got the joke. But I was with David, and he was in the recording studio, and we're sitting there, you know, and he's talking about all the young dudes, and he goes, I had heard on the radio that Mötley Hoople was breaking up, and I got really sad because I really loved that band. So I went home and I wrote all the young dudes. I like, wow, that's fascinating. I go, why don't you bust out some of that shit today? Why don't you? I said, oh, so you just wrote a hit song? He goes, yeah, I just wrote a hit song. So I go, let's bust out the shit.
I thought Lazarus was all right. You know, it wasn't like groundbreaking stuff, but I mean, it's like, it had that emotional gravitas to it.
What, all the young dudes?
No, Lazarus, his last stuff.
Oh, you know what? It's interesting. I did not listen to that, and
he'll never find out. It's okay.
But no, it's like, it's not like we were BFFs, but we were friendly. And then the idea of listening to an album where he examines, and you know, I just said, no, I'm gonna pass.
Do you realize how crazy that sounds like to be like, I'm a mortgage underwriter. I sit at here and I help people buy houses and stuff like that. And you're like,
I wasn't friends with
David Bowie, but you know, we hung out and shit. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, well, I had a hamburger for dinner. You know, I'm like,
wow, but it's
mortgage also, underwriter like a fox.
Yeah. It's just, do you realize that are amazing? You know,
no, like, but
people gravitate to you for that. And you got to hang out with this amazing person, and you still do with Dana, who's an equally amazing person. So I hope that you realize that part of you that like is really something.
I often call Dana the chubby young Duke.
The stout young dude.
No,
I know we're wasting time, but there's a thing. And tell me, I'm wondering if I'm the only one that remembers it, because I remember it so clearly. It was on Letterman one night, and they played all the young dudes, the band coming back.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're like, now, Paul, that song, there's a group of dudes, and these dudes have some news. And it just went on, and it was just so funny, you know, the way later he goes, but Paul, who are the dudes? And what is the news that the dudes have? It was just so great.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if this is a story, but I remember like it was during my manorexia and I was thin, and I bought like a red windbreaker, like Rebel Without a Cause. And I was skinny enough to pull it off. And I remember David like going, man, that looks great. Next night he was on Carson. No, he's a Tonight Show or sitting. He's wearing that fucking red jacket. I was like, come on, man.
Rise and shine, my sinners. When Father Evil starts his day, he gets a little deadly. Deadly Grounds coffee has the richest, smoothest flavor you'll find anywhere. It's sinfully delicious. Once you go deadly, you never go back. Order yours at GetDeadly.com. Coffee's so good, it's scary.
I was really bummed out, but it was pretty funny.
I wanted to ask you if you had a good story about Robin Williams. So I know that one of the things that I always go back to is that I heard that one of the reasons Judith Hoag got into the Ninja Turtles, as you can see, I'm big into turtles, was because Robin Williams had influenced her to take the job. Was Robin geeky like that? Nerdy and.
Oh yeah. I mean, Robin really liked, he was into a lot of like anime and all that stuff.
What I like is if you look in every window, and for me, it happens to be over there, but we all have the shelf.
Oh yeah.
Robin had a room.
Oh, he had like, he had a couple of rooms. He had this one room that just was just
army men.
And I felt like also there's like when I would go into a store, if I looked at something too long or touched it, it would end up, he would buy it. And so I've got like a lot of like weird dolls and toys and, you know, like Daniel Johnston, you know, the you know, all these figurines and things. And there's an ugly painting on my wall that, you know, it's just, he just had to buy and give you it all the time. And I think it might have come from when he was a kid or something, you know, not because I know that's an extension of what Dana and I do with all of us. It's like when you're a kid, you might not get these things, or you're told that you can't play with these things. And then when we're adult, this light goes on and goes, I can get a job. You know, I can get my
Johnny West.
Yeah,
I thought that was Shane.
No, nope. It's Johnny West. Johnny West is on some kind of, he's suicidal.
Yeah, his face, the facial molding of Johnny West, like, God damn it, it's a filthy world.
clearly Barbie was banging someone else or something.
He's waiting for her in the pink Corvette.
She got one look at that kung fu grip, and all I saw was the back of a horse.
Shit. I think my favorite part of the movie is the insight you get on your guys' lives that you don't really get any place else. You know, I mean, I know you mentioned the pandemic and it kind of took it in that direction. What would the movie have been like without the pandemic? Like you said, it would just have been the shows.
Yeah, it would have been a more straightforward concert film based on the three and four different shows we recorded. But I did know that there's something to be said for us just rolling the cameras all the time. And the goal was just to, you know, I didn't want Dana and I on for the cameras because that's very cringeworthy when comics are on backstage. I've done enough specials and I know that it doesn't ever even make it into the special. So that's why the camera's in the backseat. That's like, it's like you're supposed to be on the trip. But it was interesting because like I realized that I had to be the antagonist in this film. So I put in stuff that's not very flattering about me and hopefully people still like me afterwards, but
you know. It's a good balance too, because when you have Dana's act and he comes out talking about like the KKK and like shamefully masturbating behind a couch, things like that, and then you're over there and it's like you're so patient and I'm like, I'm just watching, I'm like, is he gonna say something in judgment? And then it comes out and I'm like, no, he's just validating everything he said. I'm like, all right.
The aid, you know, we're not doing a two-man show, you know, there's a lot of crazy names for baseball players, Dana, but we do this.
I'm Danny Gould and I'm a Jew. I'm Bob Goldthwait and I'm a WOP.
The Zito and Bean.
But yeah, we did a bit on that.
But we're not, you know, we're not doing the traditional thing. It's more like we, in the context of when you see us doing our stand-up bits, each other play the audience. So when I go too far, Dana says something, and when is vice versa. When Dana goes, I go, you know, we both are kind of sometimes playing the audience. And it's not really, we're not reeling each other in. We're kind of underlining to the audience is like, yeah, this is what the show is.
Yeah, I love it. I can't think of a lot of comics that I've seen like doing the two man. Like the last one I saw was, I think it was Dave Attell and Jeff Ross were doing it. They're doing like the bumping mics. And I was interested. I'm like, are they going to do stuff like that? But it was completely different. And it was something where it's like, all right, I've got my part. You've got your part. We've got our parts that kind of connect together. And yeah. I dug it.
Well, it's interesting is I'm absolutely sure that both of those shows started out the same way, which is we're friends, they're friends. And, you know, we're friends with them as well. But it was like, you want to do some shows together? Sure. And then who they are, the show grew out of who they are, and who we are, the show grew out of who we are. And one thing that Bob and I learned as we travel together is our stories are freakishly similar. You know, down to the point that as children, we were both thought to be gay because we didn't want to go hunting. You know, that's a really specific thing to have in common.
But I think the difference is we're both Irish Catholic and stuff. And I think the difference is there's two forms of Irish Catholic. There's the oppressed Dana Gould, Conan O'Brien. And then there's me, which is almost more Welsh, where everything is, I wear my heart on the sleeve. I cry. I fight. I fall in love. Even though I don't drink, I might as well. I act like I have a good buzz going. Yeah. You never have to go, how's Bobcat feeling? Nobody's ever said that. You know, it's just blah. And
you have the pathology. You just don't have the
other. It's Goofus and McGannis.
Goofus and McGallant.
Goofus and McGallant, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very well observed. I couldn't have put it better myself.
I liked the part where you just kind of talk about your parents and when Dana talks about his dad. And then the part that made me laugh probably the most in the whole movie is the picture of Bobcat sitting there in like the room with your mom. And then the bit that you, and I don't want to spoil the movie for everyone, so I won't say it, but the part in the elevator, holy shit, was that funny.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Every word of it true.
So that's what I was hoping, without sounding too pretentious, that was what I was hoping to capture in this, where you would see a story unfold, see how it becomes part of the act, which was that was, you know, that's what makes me happy. Like that happened to us, and then that ends up on stage, and then there's actual visual evidence.
It's also interesting, something I never realized before, it'd be a good line. It's a good line, too bad it's too late. It's like, for the first time in my life, my dad and I thought the same thing at the same time, which was, what the fuck did he just say?
We both thought, Bobcat better shut the fuck up at the same time.
We both thought, today's the day dad kills Bobcat.
And he thought, today's the day I kill Bobcat.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's great. That's awesome. Let's see. What we usually do on the show is we do something that's called a Week in Geek, where we talk about something that we're particularly geeky about or something that we did this week. For example, I watched Shakes the Clown, you know, and studying up for this, I watched a lot of stand up and, you know, I was going to watch Hot to Trot, but, you know, $2.99 rental.
No need for that.
Well, I mean, it's one of those.
The horse dies.
Yeah. Oh, man. John Candy.
Spoilers.
Yeah. All right. I realized in preparation for this, you know, if I'm going to talk to you about that and I watch the literal movie that you just made and you're like, yeah, you know, maybe I don't want to talk about Police Academy and shit like that. It's like, yeah, well, maybe I won't do my research on that, you know. But I was going to ask, like, is there anything that you guys have done this week that you would think is particularly geeky? You know, maybe you watched your favorite episode of The Twilight Zone or maybe.
Sure. I watched a documentary on David Cassidy. And
interesting.
I watched it because I was just kind of upset and I thought, well, this will be soothing and mindless. And it ended up being so heartbreaking and riveting and stuff. And he's dealing with mental illness. It's the end of his life. And it's just like, and I'm like going, are you kidding me? I'm crying over David Cassidy right now.
At least it wasn't David or Danny Bonaducci. So,
Well, Danny Bonaducci is wearing the white hat in this. Like, he's very articulate and he's great in it. But and Alice Cooper's in it a lot because
no kidding,
David Cassidy and Alice Cooper were friends, and it's
golf buddies, I bet.
yeah, I had a line where I was like, golf killed more rock stars than heroin. But I love Alice, but I just whatever. But hey,
the line should be, it's better to burn out than to tee off.
just a similar fictitious last name. So
it's better to burn out than to play through. Well, Bob, a better joke. What did you do nerdy this week?
I can't imagine. I got you deep, Bob.
What did you watch?
This was me yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You son of a... Wow.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
You and Weird Al.
You're a witness. Yeah, I rest my case.
I'm all like, I met him in 97.
We have to describe what it is. It's Dana.
I didn't watch anything this week because of working. I filmed the second season of a little YouTube web series I have called Hanging with Dr. Z, which if you haven't seen it, it's basically a 1970s era talk show starring Dr. Zayas as the host. And I shot that all week. And so I spent the week basically living out my childhood fantasy, which was being in a Planet of the Apes movie.
That's so great.
When you're Dr. Z, you couldn't be happier. It's like, you know, it's a little bit like Jiminy Glick, where the filter is off. When he's in that orangutan outfit, the filter's off and he's brutal, but he is genuinely happy. Like when he is in that, it's like he's quaking a little bit. He's so excited that he's Dr. Zayas.
It's funny. My girlfriend says when you're, because I've done it a lot, I've done the series and I've done odd shows around town as this weird character that I've sort of, he looks like Dr. Zayas, but he acts like Sammy Davis Jr. He's totally show busy and name droppy and show busy and
self-evolved. Sammy wasn't like, he wasn't self-evolved. I mean, Sammy was just in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's a mix of Jerry and Sammy and like a lot of 70s show business tropes.
Yeah, definitely.
My girlfriend says, when you're in the whole thing, because you're not even in there.
Yeah.
Like you don't walk the same.
You got a Tony Clifton sort of.
Yeah. Going on. You don't move the same. You don't walk the same. And it's very strange. And I was talking to the guy that does the makeup, is a really brilliant makeup guy called Andy Schoenberg, works for K&B Effects. And it is exactly what they did in the movies. It's the same exact appliance, hair pieces. The only thing that's different is it's a different kind of glue they use now. And I said, it's amazing. And you can read emotion. The only thing about it that's uncomfortable is I can't breathe through my nose. So my mouth gets really, really dry and I have to drink a lot all day because I can't breathe through my nose. And that's, other than that, it's actually very, it's fine. It's very comfortable. And he goes, oh, hang on. And he just takes this little tool and like, wriggles something in the appliance and puts it back on. We're in the appliance makeup and I can breathe it through. It's fine. Now it's perfectly comfortable.
Oh, wow.
Now I can wear it every day.
Like medical horseradish that they put up there or something to clear
out. They had holes that you could breathe through, but mine were just too narrow and I couldn't breathe them. And he just kind of cored them out. And I was like, oh yeah, no, it's great.
Huh.
Him as Dr. Zayas when you crash that, is it the 50th anniversary?
It's a big screening of it at USC Film School.
That's one of my favorite things. Just Dana just being such a dick to these guys.
How do you resist the urge to just, you know, help, the humans are about to escape. Get your paws off me, you dirty apes.
I do it all.
I think you're crazy.
but it's its own weird little character now, which is great. Because it's not me, you know, so it's really fun.
It's definitely kind of Fernwood Tonight. And I love it.
I just keep thinking of Reality Bites with Ben Stiller, where he's talking about that Dr. Zayas, Planet of the Apes.
I gave him that bank. I gave him that bank when the Ben Stiller show got picked up to series. And
then that made it into the movie.
Yeah. And then unlike me, it wasn't cut out of the movie. But when they drop the bank in the movie, it breaks. But you can't break that bank. It's plastic.
Oh, wow. But, That's a great little Easter egg right there.
Yeah. Nice.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, Ben's a big nerd. He has the Gorn head from the episode of Arena.
Oh, wow.
Star Trek. Awesome. Yeah, and it was on the
set. Yeah, that's a Star Trek with a giant lizard. And
yeah,
no, I know.
Fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's one of my favorite Star Trek episodes.
It's in the background.
We actually knew that one.
All right. Yeah.
Come on,
it's
guy.
In the background of Matthew McConaughey's office in Tropic Thunder. And some crew person bumped into it or dropped it and it got damaged. And Ben said, he goes, I was directing the movie, so I had to be cool. So I just went over to get it. And I was just saying to myself the whole time, I'm not going to lose it. Got to be cool. Not going to lose it.
Cool. Typical, typical like dweeb nerd right there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, come on, dude. Yeah. That's kind of a good question, too. Like, we were talking about this and, you know, like some of the funniest comedy movies of all time. Do you guys have like an opinion to weigh in on what you think are some of the, like maybe your top five comedy movies or anything like that? I'm going to level with you. In my top five, the movie Scrooged, absolutely one. I talk about it all the friggin' time. Wow. I love that movie so much.
I mean, it's there's classic. There's well, thanks. I mean, I'm just.
Mel Brooks is like top two, obviously.
For yeah, me, I mean, for
I mean,
me,
it's like I got Spaceballs and I've got Blazing Saddles. Like
I go, I would say for me, it's Young Frankenstein. You know,
great that, film,
because that movie, besides being hilarious, it's got a dance number. It's everything, you know. It's got a chase.
Madeline Kahn.
Yeah, and it's so funny. But I remember as a kid watching it and getting emotional. Like you get hung up. You know, you. In a lot of Mel's movies don't have that, but you're actually concerned when they're split apart. When I was like 12 or 13, I saw that movie. I walked out of the theater and bought another ticket and walked back in. It's the first movie I saw.
Yeah.
I just watched it again. So that would be it. And then there's a lot of other movies that are just really funny. You know, What We Do in the Shadows.
That is so good.
Great movie.
And then
great series too.
You know, Take the Money and Run was like a you know, Woody Allen movie when I was a kid going, which is actually really one of the first faux mockumentaries. Cause it's like,
yes,
it's like a crime movie, but it's, you know, it's really funny. I mean, those would probably be the ones that are, you know, my top when I think about it. Dana.
I have a very eclectic group. It's World's Greatest Dad, Willow Creek.
What Dreams May Come was not a comedy.
My favorite comedy is Dr. Strangelove. I just think every frame of that movie is just gorgeous. And I love Modern Romance, Albert Brooks's Modern Romance. A little too painful to watch because it was really just a year of my life. But to me, Albert Brooks's Romance is like the Who's Quadrophenia. It's one of my favorites, but it's not a casual listen. You know, you gotta sit down
or watch.
you gotta be ready to go. Bob is the only person I know that casually listens to Quadrophenia.
Listen to it the way people listen to the ocean to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And by the way, there is a lot of ocean in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I'm on a plane, I got a headset and I'm listening to Quadrophenia I go to sleep.
Yeah. No, to me, it's like The Godfather. You're going to watch it. You've got to turn off the phone. Everybody needs to be.
As soon as I hear.
And,
I'm sure Pete Townsend would be really happy.
It's
my night.
He's a subscriber. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one of my favorite comedies is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, great one. Yeah.
That
great music. That, and I'm a Dapper Dan, man. I don't want Bob.
There's so many. I mean, that's just a beautiful watch. You know, it's like,
where would you put? Because it's one of my all-time favorite movies, and it's a newer film, and that would be Boogie Nights. And I find myself laughing a lot, and I don't think people would, but
yeah, I didn't see it as a I would have to reappraise that.
I die laughing.
I worked at a Blockbuster, so that was definitely in the drama.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, I never realized that The Sopranos was so funny until I rewatched it.
Yeah, well, Boogie Nights. Come on, with Ricky Springfield, friend of mine. You know, I mean, it's, or when he all the when he's doing all the, you know, he does that song from the Transformers.
Yeah. You got the cartoon. Touch, the Stan Bush song.
You got the touch.
Yeah. Come on, man. That's his tears. You know?
You give us the fucking tapes, and we can.
I
get
love
you
John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
The man can do so much with comedy.
He can do so much. But Alfred Molina, the Alfred Molina scene is traumatizing.
Yeah, but I love that scene. I thought it was funny. Alfred Molina, I was talking to him about that scene, and he's wearing earplugs because
it's just loud.
No, because he didn't want P.T. Anderson didn't want him reacting, so they put earplugs in. So when he goes, that's Cosmo, he's Chinese. I said, were you ad-libbing in that movie? He's like, no. And then I quoted all those. He goes, okay, well, that was an ad-lib. Okay, yeah, that was an ad-lib.
such a great actor, too. And it's like, it's funny that he comes from, like, where was the first time you remember seeing Alfred Molina? It's like, oh, he was the guy who had spiders on his back.
Yeah,
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. And then, you know, there's talk that I'm not sure if he's going to be in it, but this new Spider-Man movie, if he hopefully comes back as Dr. Octopus. And it's like, that's one of the most like emotional roles we've seen him in such a long time, you know, where it's like you actually care about the character. He's a bad guy.
I feel like that that was his first role. The Raiders was his first film role. And and he's talking to Spielberg about his backstory and things like that. And Spielberg's like, my characters don't have backstories. Just pick up the idol and run.
Yeah. Read the room, Alfred.
Look at the next scene. You're dead.
Yeah. Love it.
That's so funny.
I think in this scene.
Come back in Raiders 5 as the corpse of the guy from Raiders 1.
But I think, like, you know, when you're a director that like, but part of the job is answering questions that you want to go. Just say the line.
Yeah.
just put the hat on. It's like, you, I wrote this with you saying these words in my head, so just say the words. But it's a privilege to direct. So when an actor comes up with a question that I think is kind of inane or asinine, I take the time and I answer it, and I remember that this was the job, you know. And I'm sure other people act differently, but I've stopped down productions to have lengthy conversations with an actor, and then we go and film it, and they do it the exact same way. It always is true. And they go, hey, man, thanks. I really got it that time. I was like,
I never realized that you worked with Val Kilmer. So,
well, people will talk stuff to death, but you have to make them feel that they're trusted, that they're respected, that they can make mistakes, that they can do stuff. You know,
no.
It's like when we did World's Greatest Dad, like, you know, I told Robin before we started, I said, I'm never going to move on without you feeling that we got it. But what I didn't know was that he would do things over and over and over and over. And the insurance company showed up 2 weeks in, and they're going to pull the plug on me because I'm burning so much film.
Oh, wow.
And then I said, hey, you trust me now? And he's like, yeah. Because he's like, hey B, what are those people? Who are those people? I go, well, that's the thing. That's the insurance company. You know what I did? You know what I did?
That's the Baptist Church of Beverly Hills. They want their money back.
You know what I did? You know what I did initially when they showed up? I took them and I put them right off camera because I knew when we said cut, Robin would have find an audience and start entertaining them. You know, and he did. He would just start playing for these guys, and then they go, oh, we had a great day. it's like, okay. But eventually they're like, dude, we're gonna pull the plug.
Oh wow!
I know when I did Stand Against Evil, and I first met with John McGinley, he asked me a lot of questions that I did not have the answers to, and in finding those answers, I was really, really glad he asked them because that all came up later, you know. So,
yeah,
it was such a cool show too, you know. And it was one of those things. We're big fans of like Ash versus the Evil Dead. And mm-hmm. I was like, when I started watching Stan, I'm like, all right, how is this going to like add up to like Army of Darkness and all that? But it was so different. And the characters are so different.
It was never intended. I love Ash and the Evil Dead too much to want to do a shitty version of it. The reason my podcast took so long was because I didn't want to do just a shitty version of Mark Maron's. You know, I wanted to come up with something in my own. And the premise of Stand Against Evil was, it took me forever to come up with the simplest idea. What if in the X-Files, instead of being partnered with David Duchovny, she was partnered with my dad? That's the idea.
Nice.
That's the show. And Stand Against Evil was a last minute title. And I would have never done it had I even realized that it was similar to Ash versus the Evil Dead. I was like, I'm not that dumb. Look, if I'm going to steal something, I'll be a lot smarter than that.
Yeah. That's like, God Bless America. The characters are Frank and Roxy. And in the movie Super, the people that go, the young girl and the old guy are Frank and Roxy.
Right.
And, people were like, I like this movie better when it was called Super. And it's like, I hadn't seen it, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's how James Gunn and I actually became friends, because James Gunn said, that movie's not a ripoff. And then I saw that movie and I was like, wow, that's a weird coincidence. And then we became friends, and it made the nerds furious that we would show up on social media together. They're like, he stole from you, and this is the narrative we had in our head.
Yeah, and I'm friends with Bruce Campbell. It just puts a fly in the ointment.
But as soon as, like, because this was years ago, as soon as
I already had a boner with your picture with Weird Al, so like, you can stop digging. You done hit oil.
Oh. So nicest man. He's the nicest man in the world.
But with James Gunn, as soon as he and I showed up on social media together, it's like, Bob can't go to his voice of Rocket.
Oh, wow. Did you check out his new one, The Suicide Squad?
Oh, yeah. I went opening
night. So great.
It was so good. You know, it's one really of those good things. Like, I'm not a big fan of the Jared Leto Joker from the first one. Matt likes him. He likes the interpretation and all that. So, you know, we have our back and forth, but this new one is just, there's nothing to argue about. It's just really fun.
It's great, and it's funny. I said, I go, it's got the laughs, and it's got an awesome soundtrack, it's got heart, and you know, I mean, that's, and then people are like, how do you say this movie's got heart? And you know, it's like, because I'm getting choked up over a weasel, for God's sakes,
right?
You know.
Like my kids watched it, and they're like, that polka dot man, he's just the greatest and all
And
I'm like, wow, okay, you connected to that, okay, well, whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah kids today. I think you know, I'm not one of these people, you know, I don't have a problem with a well-done superhero movie, you know. I'm not one of these. I don't feel that like a superhero movie is preventing me from making my, you know, it's not taking me away from making my zombie fetus film.
Okay. You know, well, I saw The Irishman. So if you're talking about Scorsese and all that,
no, I wasn't.
It was about 3 hours. I'm never getting back.
Rob's making Night of the Toddling Dead.
I will make my zombie fetus movie someday. You watch, especially now. I should shoot it in Texas.
Matt, I live in Austin too, bedroom. So yeah, come on down.
He's got all the clown stuff that you need, you know, for Shakes, you know, too.
I should really look at that script, because it was about an abortion provider.
Is it a trauma film? I mean,
no, zombie. Okay. I think someone else did an ankle biters, but I had written a script that was ankle biters about zombie fetuses. It was based on this minister who was in Wisconsin who stole what he thought was fetuses, but he stole fetuses and then gave them a Christian burial. That's a true story. And he got arrested because he had all these fetuses in his apartment. So I thought, oh, this just writes itself. You know, he's having the burial. The ankle biters come to life. They kill a guy, you know. So
I feel like they talk about that in The Witcher too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in like the sense of it's an old story where it's like if something happens, it ends up turning into like this terrible monster that's like there's a curse upon the family. And so it's like that whole thing. So,
well, it's kind of, you know,
there's some mythology behind it.
It's just back to like Dead Alive, you know, which has always been Dead Alive. I have a sweet spot for, because one Christmas someone gave that to me. And it just became a tradition. Every Christmas, my daughter and I would sit down and watch Dead Alive, like from when she was like nine up. You know, it's our Scrooge.
We watch Castle Freak here
for Christmas.
Just kidding. I'm sorry, but I forgot to tell you from the beginning, I'm an asshole. If you didn't pick up on that, I apologize.
Well, I don't have to, you know. I'm kind of known as an asshole, so I do anything that's not assholic, you're shocked. You're going, hey, Bobcat seems pretty together. Because at no point during the tour do I set anything on fire.
I said well-adjusted, for the record.
Well-adjusted, okay. Okay. Yeah, well, the bar is pretty low on what I have to do to be well-adjusted.
Oh, that's great.
Sure.
Where is this going to be available? Because I saw that it was coming out, I think, on the 26th of October. Is it going to be streaming?
29th.
Okay. Where can people see it?
29th, it's on iTunes. People can pre-order it. And it's on most places where you have you can get movies, you know. But we also are doing, I don't know when your podcast airs, but Dana and I are doing a little dog and pony show where we're bringing the movie and doing a Q&A. And we're doing it in Boston, and Brooklyn,
yeah. Chicago, LA, Boston, Chicago. Brooklyn, LA, and
Naperville. Oh, no, it's good.
I'll come over and just do the one man show. I'll have Dana puppet with me. Yeah.
But we're going to show the movie and then we'll walk out. You know, that was a fun movie, Bob. You know, these baseball players today all have funny names.
I love that. That's so great. I want to thank you guys so much. Where do you like fans to interact with you? If even that, like, do you like them to find you on Twitter? Dana was actually the first person I ever followed on Twitter. So, social media. Oh yeah. I was total shut in. So it's like, let me get on this thing. And then I'm like, Dana, cool. Hell yeah. You know,
that's great.
Grandpa's on Instagram, you know, it's a strange world. Cause it's, just doing comedy was enough before, just making your movie. It's Dana and I are VHS comedians in a TikTok world.
Now you got to go and bake a cake. And
So now you can, I'm on Instagram. I sometimes talk to people, but I'm not about to argue with them about things. You know, I save that for my live shows.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, oddly, of all the platforms, Instagram is the one that I tend to prefer to talk to people. For some reason, Twitter is, you have to work really hard to stay positive on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which I have to work really hard to stay positive anyway. And I do. And so I don't, you know, on Twitter, it's like, it's a joke I tell on stage, but it's true. It's like Twitter, like, knock, knock. What about the homeless? Fuck you. You know, it's like, sometimes Twitter is like a toilet bowl with a ladle hanging off the side. I don't know if I want that today.
What are we arguing about today? NFTs?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always something Twitter. To do. Twitter, Instagram is really probably the easiest place. Just leave a comment on our post.
Instagram. We have our robust Instagram. I saw, Matt, you posted some fun stuff. So I want to thank you guys again. I'll cut off this recording here in a second. And I just wanted to say this has been a lot of fun.
Oh, super awesome. Cool. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, guys.
Can you show us what the monkeys may throw feces? Can we see that whole thing?
What did you want to say?
Is that real?
Yeah, it's a real circus sign.
Warning, monkeys.
Yeah, he has a collection of Ouija boards and all kinds of fun stuff in there.
That's gorgeous. Yeah. That's a great sign. I have it's not real. I have this shed in the backyard that I ordered a nice ornate wooden carved sign that says Gein family.
Oh, nice. I love it.
All right, let me show you my cool thing since we're trading.
Well, if you insist, I mean.
Oh, we could be here. This is another 2 hours.
No, I'm just going to throw down the gauntlet.
No.
Uh-oh.
This was in a movie called Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Son of a bitch, the Ed Wood film.
I can't believe you just touched that with bare hands.
Yeah. Wow.
Who says they're bare?
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's the so great. You see on the bottom where they glued a square to match the set.
Oh yeah. My God. It's like that hurts Man. Me. It's like
I shouldn't own it. It's
it's like you playing with a Eucharist.
Well, I thought you valued it.
You've worked with most of the actors from that one, you know, Bill Murray, Johnny Depp. So
yeah, I don't have anything that awesome right behind me. This is from World's Greatest Dad. That's
oh nice
he's got, but we're really getting too weird now. All right, here's this is
I love that.
This was given to me by Demi Moore. If I can name drop some more.
Oh wow.
Maybe we'll just end on this. This is
I would have thought that was Bruce Valanche, but
this is Charles Whitman's yearbook.
Oh wow.
A little Austin shout out.
Awesome.
That's crazy. On that note,
Bob threw the trump card.
And thanks for listening to the episode of Life HQ. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to our episode. This was actually episode 96, but I think we called it 95 in the episode. Thank you to our guests, Bobcat Goldthwait and Dana Gould, and their film that's coming out called Joyride. Be sure to check us out on social media on Twitter, @GeekLifeHQ, on Instagram, GeekLifeHQ, and our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great day. Are you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic books? Then Epic Tales from the Sewers is a podcast for you. We cover the comic books, video games, movies, cartoons, and anything else turtle related. We talk about the toys, we talk about the cereal, we talk about all the fun things about turtles that we love so much. So give a listen. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. Check out Epic Tales from the Sewers, part of the Epic Airways podcast network. Give a listen, dudes. Cowabunga is this podcast for you.